The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Pro-America Report. This is Ryan Height continuing a week of filling in here for Mr. Ed Martin, who is out on assignment, and I am glad to be back with you today. Go to ProAmericaReport.com and PhyllisSchlafly.com. ProAmericaReport.com is where you're going to find Ed's Substack and all of the things he's writing about. PhyllisSchlafly.com, of course, the archives of the Pro-America Report, the podcast, the standalone segments, links and resources, and the all-important Wink email sign-up. There is where you don't want to miss it. Go there. Sign up for the Wink email every weekday morning. You will not be sorry. You won't miss out. Let's kick off into it. There is a coming danger that is, it's not new. This is definitely not new as far as a danger to the electoral system in America, but it's one that I see come back over and over again. It's like a bad penny. It just won't go away. And it is something I think we need to talk about because those forces that continue to pump millions of dollars into this and time and effort, they are very good at repackaging this idea, making it sound like something exciting, something helpful, something trustworthy. But in fact, it is all just the proverbial lipstick getting put on a pig. And what am I talking about? I am talking about dark leftist money, leftist dark money pushing ranked choice voting. Now, ranked choice voting is something you may have heard of before. It also goes under a few other names. So let me get into a definition here to make sure that you and I both know exactly what we're talking about. And then I'm going to give you the quick one-liner, the what you need to know, and then we're going to dive off into a little bit of a conversation and an understanding around this topic. Because I think that it is something we must be very vigilant about, very informed about, and ready to fight against it. Because as we've just seen this week in municipal elections, particularly school board elections across the country, there is not a very big group of registered voters who are ready to get out and do the really simple stuff, the really easy stuff. The November elections are a whole different ballgame. And, you know, don't hear me bashing voters, but it's a different ballgame. So many people come out to the November elections. That's why stuff like this, you will see ballot initiatives appear on the November election. There's more people and they are more uninformed. And of course, I don't mean you, obviously, not you and me. We are informed voters, I'm sure. If you're listening to this program, though, I'm not kidding. I'm quite certain you're an informed voter. But here, let me back up. So ranked choice voting. We're getting off into the weeds. Sorry about that. There's a lot happening this week. Getting off into the weeds. Ranked choice voting, also known as an instant runoff system. What this is instead of choosing one candidate, voters would rank all of the candidates in a given race from favorite to least favorite. So if no candidate, you understand, if you've got hypothetically five candidates, you're going to rank them in the order that you like them. Numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, your favorite to your least favorite candidate. So if no candidate gets more than 50% of votes based on the voter's first choice, an instant runoff takes place. Now, this instant runoff, you may ask, probably done by a computer. Certainly not hand-counted ballots, I'm quite sure of that. But an instant runoff takes place, meaning the candidate with the least number of votes is eliminated. So people who voted for that candidate basically automatically recast their vote for the second choice. And then this process repeats itself with runoff after runoff until a candidate gets more than 50% on a single round of voting. Now, Make no mistake, there are states around the country that have runoff elections, but that is not this. A two-round runoff is very different than an instant runoff, and this is what you need to know. What you need to know is the instant runoff system, ranked choice voting, is essentially manipulation of our elections by the elites. Ranked choice voting is manipulation of our election by the elites. That's what you need to know. There is a lot of dark money behind this. So let's talk about this for just a second, the process, and then I want to get into who's behind it, because we are seeing these efforts and initiatives pop up all over the place, and it must be addressed. It's incredibly important. So here, unlike the regular runoff elections that we see, and you know how that works. I mean, Missouri doesn't have them, but I know that Oklahoma does, Georgia does. There's a lot of states that do. The way that that works is everyone comes to the polls, we all vote, and out of if there's four candidates and none of them receives a majority result or 50% or more, an absolute majority, then typically what happens, we have another election date scheduled about a month away, and the two highest vote getters go into that election. And now we all come back and choose between these two instead of among these five different people. So we continue to have basically a runoff, and everyone continues to vote each time until a majority. And I say each time, you know what I mean? There's one. A majority at the end of this process, a majority is demanded of the people who came and voted. We must do this until one person, one candidate, receives approval from a majority of the voters who voted. That sounds reasonable to me. I like that system. In fact, I like the idea of that, because what are we doing? We are taking away the ability to win an election in this state, this region, whatever municipality or governance this is. We're taking away the ability to win by plurality. And what that means, plurality versus majority. Plurality means you just got more than anyone else, but that doesn't mean you got the majority of everyone involved. So we see this all the time. We had this in a pretty contentious primary in 2016. There were four pretty big name candidates running in the Republican gubernatorial primary here in Missouri. And there were big groups of people behind each of these four in the primary. They had pretty big sections of support. Well, one person won with 35% of the vote. And it's, you know, at this point, Missouri's pretty red state. Whoever wins the Republican primary very likely is going to go on to be the governor. This person essentially, you know, he got a majority in the general election, but he did not get a majority of Republicans to approve him as the nominee. He only got 35%. That's a plurality. So let's think about this. If you want to turn our nation into an instant runoff system, or a state, or whatever level of government we're talking about here, what you're doing is, you know, proponents of this will claim that this gets rid of bickering, this gets rid of attack ads, that this will give a lot of security and instant quick votes and results to the to the electoral process. But in every place across the country where this has been put down, in places across the world where this kind of ranked choice voting, RCV, or an instant runoff, again, you're going to hear different names for it, but listen to the process, because that's where you can tell what this is. I've even had that. Someone walked up to me here in Missouri one time and asked, hey, would you sign our petition? We're trying to get this on the ballot. And you look at it and say, now, how do you explain this to me? Is this ranked choice voting? Oh, no. This isn't ranked choice voting. And they proceed to explain an instant runoff system. I say, yeah, that's ranked choice voting. No, I'm not signing the petition. I don't want that. We don't need that. That's what happens, because this is a real thing. There are several problems with this. I mean, first of all, you look at the plurality thing alone. Australia is a big example. They have ranked choice voting. In the 2010 House of Representatives elections, they're equivalent to the House of Reps. The Labor Party won the House with 38% of first place votes, even though the other party, the Liberal National Coalition, received 43% of first place votes, because it was all in how it worked out, how the computer put everything together and how it moved forward. You're asking voters to hypothetically strategize third and fourth and fifth and sixth rounds of elimination rather than just focusing on their first choice among the top tier candidates or a party or a system or whatever it is. And the problem, another big problem with this, people don't mark everything. This is called ballot exhaustion. You're going to find a lot of people who'll just rank their top few and leave blank spaces after that. Well, guess what? If their top voice votes, their top choices are eliminated, their ballot no longer counts. So we've seen this come into a massive consequence in places like San Francisco. The 2011 mayoral race ran on ranked choice voting. Ballot exhaustion resulted in 27% of voters being silenced in that election because they didn't fully mark out their ballots. They didn't end up having a say in the final result. This is a bad news system, and it's being pushed by huge dark money groups, leftist dark money groups, because why? It creates a power vacuum. What this does is it supplants completely our structured system of people voting and having a say, and instead it creates a system that is going to essentially hand over this ambiguous power to people behind the scenes. It's a manipulation of the election, make no mistake. And there are coming down the pike several initiatives in several different states that are trying to get ranked choice voting on the ballot. I think that there are 6 to 10 states right now that may have it on the ballot this November. We have got to be armed with information against this. We've got to be telling people about it, because this would blow up our traditional party primary system in America and replace it with I think that the what I've heard described best as a jungle primary. It's going to be awful. Ranked choice voting, instant runoff, this is bad news, and it's got big donors pushing it across the country because it's elite choice voting. That's essentially what it is. It hands over the power into the elites. And we see it time and time again. We'll talk a little bit about it. There's tons of examples. Alaska and Maine are the primary states that have ranked choice voting at the state level. We could go into some major examples there. I might do it. Come back in the wrap up and we'll talk about that. So stick around after the guest and get on back to the wrap up. We're going to talk about it. Go to Pro America Report. Go to PhyllisSchlafly.com. But we are out of time here in the first segment. So stick around after the break. We will be right back here on the Pro America Report.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Our next guest, it was about 10 days ago, we tried to book him, and I had not read most of his book, which I've now read. Dan Negrea is one of the co-authors with Matthew Kronig of a new book out from Republic Book Publishers, and very, very interesting. We Win, They Lose, Foreign Policy and the New Cold War. Friends at Republic Book Publishers, we love them so we're glad this book is just out. So welcome, sir, to the program. How are you?
Ed, I'm terrific. Honored to be on your program, sir.
Well, thank you. And so you have, we're in the State Department during the Trump administration, and you are from originally communist Romania, defected from there. And so you have to say, spanned the world in terms of where you've lived and worked. I should say you worked in Romania and defected from there. So first, an observation. How different is the world post-Cold War? When you look at it and say, you know, it's uncharted territory, but how different is it? Or maybe how are things always sort of the same?
Well, first of all, thanks again for having me. Let me start with a disclaimer. I'm currently a senior director at the Atlantic Council, responsible for the Freedom Prosperity Center. But this book is, and the Atlantic Council is a nonpartisan institution, but this book is a partisan book. The subtitle is We Win, They Lose, and the subtitle is Republican Foreign Policy and the New Cold War.
Right.
So I will be partisan and represent myself and not my institution.
Okay.
Your question is a fascinating one because it's extraordinary to what extent we are coming back to a situation comparable to the one in the previous Cold War.
Right.
And coming back to many of the same dynamics and even the terminology in the previous Cold War. So first of all, we are in a Cold War. We make this premise in our book, and we put it on the cover of the book, number one. We have again a free world, the United States, NATO allies, Japan, Australia, South Korea in Asia and so on. And then we have a new axis of evil. We have a group of countries, in a way comparable to what we had in the previous Cold War, the Soviet Union and its satellites. And then we have again what I like to call the new non-aligned movement. We have countries that claim not to take sides, but sometimes by not taking a side in the face of evil, you do take sides in the face of evil. So the world is, again, very dangerous and in many ways comparable. And some people actually say we are in a moment that is more dangerous than at any time since the 1930s.
Again, Dan Negrea is our guest. His book, We Win, They Lose, Republican Foreign Policy and the New Cold War. As he mentioned, he's now the Atlantic Council affiliated with them, speaking on his own, though, here. A different part of this question, as only an American can ask, like I am, say something like this, but because you lived through the communist era and the Soviets, but it seems to me, observing the communist Chinese, maybe it's because their nation is stronger economically, is larger, and maybe it's because the time I lived was the last few decades of the Soviet communist. Feels like the Soviet communist attention to America, infiltration of our institutions, propaganda against us, was effective in its way, but relatively, now looking at it, sort of managed, meaning we can see what it was. It feels to me like the communist Chinese are an opponent in a Cold War of a scale we don't even recognize right now. We're not talking about a few spies in government. I think we're talking about a system of negative attention on America from the communist Chinese, using technology, using business, using spy capability. That's like the Soviets on a million steroids.
Very astute observation, Ed. Totally agree with you. In the case of the Soviet Union, the separation, the break, was much more pronounced. Nowadays, if you listen to the White House, we are in a competition with the Chinese in circumstances of interdependence. By the way, I reject that. I reject. Uh-huh. I think we are not depending on each other. We are, for the moment, interlocked, but both sides are pulling apart. Mm. But you are absolutely right. There are hundreds of thousands of Chinese students. There are Confucius institutes that are infiltrated and are set up with agents of the Chinese Communist Party there. There are even police stations that have been uncovered in the United States. The FBI is saying that they're constantly uncovering new plots by the Chinese. You are also very right that business people who are doing business with the People's Republic of China have an interest in continuing this. And then we have this huge issue of TikTok,
right,
where 140 million, 160 million American citizens are using TikTok, which is clearly under the control of the Chinese Communist Party, a propaganda tool and a sensor that they are putting out there, collecting data through all these people that go to the Chinese Communist Party.
It's, Dan Negrea and his book, available everywhere you get books, just came out a few days ago. We Win, They Lose, Republican Foreign Policy and the New Cold War from Republic Books. In the book, one of the things you say is the conservative worldview is best suited for the coming confrontation with China. What does that mean to a layman? And is there an echo of of the Soviet communist American interaction, where there were some people that said, look, if you recognize the Soviets as evil, you're not sitting across the table the same way. They lie, they cheat. And then you had others that said, yeah, you know, if we just work with them well enough, it'll come our way eventually. I mean, this sort of, I'm being a little glib, but accommodationists versus the hardliners. But why is a conservative worldview better for what's coming?
Again, an excellent question. I think that the progressive worldview is that people are generally good, and if we are just nice to other people, they're going to be nice back to us. Obama famously said, if you stretch out your hand, they will unclench their fist, and he was referring to the Iranians. I think recent history has proven that this was not the case. Conservatives approach the world from almost a religious point of view, where we say, you know, it's the fallen nature of humanity, and we need to be aware that there are people who are evil, and we need to counter evil and fight evil. And this is why our book talks about the Trump-Reagan fusion. And Reagan, one of the great things that he contributed was clarity. That we were fighting what? The evil empire.
Right.
There was no moral equivalency between us and the Soviet Union. We were the good guys. We were the shining city on the hill. They were the bad guys. It contributed tremendously to winning the Cold War, the fact that we empowered ourselves and also the people in those countries to understand that this fight was between good and evil. So this is why conservative perspective is better. And I'm happy to tell you how the Biden administration views it, how we think that we should view it.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Dan Negrea. His new book is out, and we will take a break and come back and talk to him some more here in a moment. I'm going to keep him for a second segment. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Let's continue our conversation. Dan Negrea, his book is We Win, They Lose, Republican Foreign Policy, a Fusion of Trump and Reagan. Very interesting. Republic Book Publishers. Dan, let's talk back to Dan here. And one of the things about the book that's so helpful is, and again, the book is We Win, They Lose, Republican Foreign Policy, the New Cold War. It doesn't just tell you all the problems. It says, here's the strategy going forward. And here's the way, if you accept the notion that the conservative worldview and this fusion of Trump and Reagan, which they argue in the beginning of the book, then here's what you do going forward. And I want to just probe that for a second in this way. We know the Ukraine war, and we see it. And obviously in the Middle East, there's all kinds of, you can make a list, and your expertise, you can make a list of probably 50. What's the, when you come to the, look at the communist Chinese, how soon And how will the coming confrontation come? Is it going to be the crisis of Taiwan? Is it going to be more clarity on the impact, as you mentioned, of propaganda of TikTok? How do you see this coming confrontation? Can you game a little bit? I know it's predicting, but game a little bit of how it will look and when it's coming. Is it tomorrow or is it in 20 years?
We are in the middle of it. Confrontation started a long time ago. One of the extremely valuable contributions of President Trump in his 2017 national security strategy was to break with what we had as a policy under the Obama administration, which was under Obama policy of cooperation, emphasizing cooperation with China, which had started actually in the W. Bush years, but that was the emphasis. And under President Trump, we then moved to a strategic competition. There's a new definition, which was also picked up, by the way, the Europeans who say that they are a strategic adversary. Now, we are now in a situation where we need to recognize China as an adversary. We are even beyond a competitor, because competition assumes that both sides play by rules, like a tennis game. You're on your side, I'm on my side. There are rules. There is a referee. You listen to the referee. As you said before, the Chinese lie, steal, and cheat. So the competition is now, the adversarial relationship is now, and it is multidimensional. It is in the military sphere, where they're very actively and rapidly and significantly arming. Mm-hmm. In the economic sphere, in which there is mercantilism, they are using the power of the state to help their companies compete with American companies that don't have the same support from the state. It is in the diplomatic sphere. It is in the ideological sphere. It's a multidimensional competition that is happening right now. And you are correct to mention Taiwan. That's the hotspot that may end up in being a shooting war rather than a cold war. Let's pray it won't be the case. Mm-hmm. Let's pray that we will deter them. And this is why we argue in the book that the emphasis should be like in the first Cold War, peace through strength.
Again, we're talking with Dan Negrea, and he's a senior director of the Atlanta Council of Freedom and Prosperity Center. He's speaking on his own behalf here, not on behalf of that organization anyway. He served in the Trump administration, and he has an MBA from Cornell, but he began his life in communist Romania, serving there in the Ministry of Finance, and then defecting from there to America, and now brings all of his insight to this current moment. One more aspect of this, however, that I need to ask you about, because at this point you've written books, you've spoken all over the world, you know, you've worked in the fields, the communication realm. If the Soviet communists had propaganda and they could influence, you know, some of the journalists, they could influence some of the Hollywood folks, they could influence some politicians, they couldn't get access. It was labor intensive to educate and to recruit fellow travelers in the propaganda war. The communist Chinese are working in a time where communication can be so low cost and so rapid, whether it's social media, that's one, but also just electronic media, the ability to sort of change how people see things and understand them, and the tools to do it. You know, I often argue that TikTok's problem is not that it's data. That's a problem, sure. But the big problem is, just like Meta and just like others of social media, they're learning how to change people's brains through neuroscience, through the way we react to likes and to things. And that's a different advantage. And I guess my question to you is more about, do we understand that in a way that allows us to react in a full way? In other words, not just, oh, isn't that unfortunate, but no, you're losing the ability to win broadly if you don't understand it dramatically right now.
Totally agree with you. And let me add one more field to the fields that you mentioned, in which the competition is extremely worrisome. And as you so very well put it, right now, and we don't understand it, which is the southern border, which is open. Right now, the largest number of illegal aliens entering the United States on the western side of the southern border are from China. Now, stop and think about it. There were something like 35,000 Chinese citizens entering illegally the United States last year. Mm-hmm. Only since October, that number has increased the rate, because since October, since 21,000, there are also 100,000 Chinese citizens who came illegally in past years that their request for asylum has not been granted, that are in the United States, that should be deported, but the People's Republic of China does not take them back. Put that aside, and let's reflect on the one and a half known gotaways. So all these illegal aliens come to the border, they meet our border patrol people, and they give themselves up. They say, hi, I'm here, and they get processed. 1.5 million don't do that. These people are not afraid of the border patrol, because they process them, then release them in the country. But 1.5 million are avoiding the border patrol. It is reasonable to assume that some of them are Chinese. It is also very reasonable to assume that those who avoid the border patrol have nefarious interests. Mm-hmm. Either they've been caught before or they have a case file somewhere else. It is very worrisome that we have this situation where the Chinese Communist Party is very likely to have agents among these people who are coming into our country, and we don't know who they are.
Yeah, it speaks of a lack of seriousness of our nation that we're not getting it. I know a lot of I know that some of the political leaders are, and I know that you know some of them on the flyleaf of your book, you know, Congressman Gallagher, who's been digging into some of these issues, and others. But they get it. But it's not when it's not led by the president, as we talk about. Biden doesn't have this worldview. Then it's dramatic. Again, the book is "We Win, They Lose: Republican Foreign Policy in the New Cold War." Matthew Koenig is one of the authors. Dan DeGray is another author with us right now. Last question, I just have a minute or so. Do you think if there's a Trump second presidency, do you think, knowing what we know now and how it's gone, this set of policies, we win, they lose, this understanding, or maybe more importantly, getting the American people to understand that the communist Chinese are a threat, not a competitor? Are you optimistic that we can convey that, and that we can, because all the forces that want us to say it's a competition are mostly big money, you know, Wall Street and world trade and all. But are you confident? Is that one way to look at the election?
Very much so. And again, excellent question. The foreword to our book was written by Mike Pompeo. I had the great privilege to work for Secretary Pompeo when I was in the State Department. He talks about this book as being a guide to conservative foreign policy, and he ends his foreword by saying, "I hope to see copies of this book at the White House and the State Department." We believe that we reflect conservative thinking right now, and again, we view our book as a Trump-Reagan fusion. We think that this is where the Republican Party is, and I believe there will be a newfound seriousness in viewing the relationship with China, with Russia, with Iran, and with North Korea, the new axis of evil.
Well, from your lips to God's ear, or to the voting public's ear, thank you, Dan DeGray. Thanks for writing the book and for your service in the Trump administration, and especially for raising this call. We Win, They Lose: Republican Foreign Policy and the New Cold War, out just a few days ago from our friends at Republic Book Publishers. We love those guys. You're going to want to look at this one and get it and track this voice. Thank you, sir, for your time.
Thank you. Excellent questions. Thanks, Ed.
Thanks very much. All right. We'll take a break, everybody. We'll be right back. That was really good. Really good. I went longer, as you can tell, than I usually do, because he was it was compelling and important. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
TikTok is one of the most popular social media platforms in the world, boasting millions and millions of users. At one time, it was just an exciting new way for people to lip sync their favorite songs and put dances on video. But now it's become a cesspool of content dizziness that's harming the youth of our nation. Of course, the fact that the communist Chinese government owns and controls the app raises significant concerns about TikTok's influence on our American culture and the West in general. However, the impact that it has on individuals is also problematic and must be addressed. Faith Kuzma, a retired English professor, argues that TikTok has a particularly outsized impact on the minds of young women. Kuzma describes the experience of spiraling on TikTok. She says, spiraling is an actual psychological term for becoming mentally dizzy. TikTok's For You page is overwhelming, piping a steady stream of the most viral videos to kids. Kuzma continued, it's a world saturated with an overabundance of consciousness. Self-consciousness, body consciousness, identity consciousness. It's ideal for getting girls to spiral. Likes and follows are the traps traditionally used by social media to get and keep people addicted to scrolling. But TikTok has far more advanced data collection. Teen Magazine observed, every second you hesitate or rewatch, the TikTok app tracks you. TikTok's extremely complex data collection and algorithms allow the app to finely tune content for every user. And it's not just a business model. It's a complete mental capture, impacting a young person's brain like a hard drug. The algorithm means that young people can spiral into rabbit holes and barely realize it's happening. And this algorithmic spiraling has contributed to the transgender craze, as well as the rise of anti-Semitism among American youth. TikTok must be stopped, not only because it's a propaganda tool of the Chinese communists, but also because it is a public health crisis.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Political correctness is no longer simply about restricting speech. This tool for tyranny has led to employees being fired, pastors silenced, small businesses closed, and truth suppressed. Thankfully, the politically correct can't censor the work at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Join us, won't you, at PhyllisSchlafly.com. And thanks for listening to the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Hey, welcome back to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Height here to close out the show for us today. Glad to have an opportunity to spend some time with you, hear from a good guest today, a great double segment from Dan Negrea. And we've got a good little addition here. I wanted to come back real quick and tag on, if we could, to our What You Need to Know, our wink today about ranked choice voting, how it's a terrible system. It's not ranked choice voting. It's elite choice voting, because that's what it does. It manipulates the system and creates, what do we call it, a jungle primary instead of our party primaries that we have. But let me remind you real quick once again, proamericareport.com, phyllisschlafly.com. That's where you're going to find all the goodies that you want to get to, the podcasts, Ed's Substack, also our Wink email sign-up over at phyllisschlafly.com. Don't miss out. Go to those two websites. You won't be sorry. But let's get back to it real quick. I promised you we closed out and we're running out of time in the first segment. Because ranked choice voting is just such a terrible idea that it takes more than, you know, one radio segment to take care of it. It really is. It's a horrible thing. The more you dive into it. But I wanted to play this out. So there are only two states that have ranked choice voting at the state level, Maine and Alaska. Now, there are definitely empirical pieces of empirical evidence that we have to show what a terrible idea this is. And let's make this wrap up. Good ideas and bad ideas. OK, so the bad ideas, just to tag on, the ranked choice voting that we saw in Alaska, Election Day 2022. That was the first one. I think we saw it in November 8th. And one of the big things they say, oh, we'll get rid of all of these delays and it won't take forever to tabulate the votes and we'll have quicker results. Yeah, well, that didn't happen. We put ranked choice voting in Alaska and that didn't happen. You know what happened? We voted on Election Day, November 8th, but the races in Alaska, the race in Alaska for the incumbent, Lisa Murkowski, and also the Democrat incumbent, Representative Mary Peltola, those weren't tabulated until November 23rd. The Election Day was November 8th, but the votes didn't even get tabulated until the 23rd, days later, weeks later. It was incredible. And what did we see? Well, Lisa Murkowski was slightly trailing behind her Trump-backed Republican challenger until all of the ballots were counted. After the ranked choices were finished, this instant runoff system, she ended up winning with 54% of the vote. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. In Maine, too, 8 days after Election Day, the results were announced. So that's just a load of hot garbage. It doesn't speed anything up. It makes it worse. It makes it more convoluted. All of the fixes that you and I both want in our election systems, the safeguards that we want to know this is a good system that's working and that hears our voice, that counts the legal votes, ranked choice does nothing for them. Don't be fooled. Don't listen to it. Instant runoff system is terrible. Now, let's flip over to the good ideas before we run out of time, because there is an individual, Congressman Warren Davidson, who deserves our praise for a good idea. This is an Ohio Republican. We've actually run into him at our events with the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles group out in D.C. He comes every once in a while. Good friend of ours, and a good conservative in the House. He has introduced legislation to repeal the 16th Amendment. This is great, great news. The 16th Amendment, for those of you who may not know, is the income tax, one of the worst and most regressive taxes, the most horrible way that you could possibly tax someone's productivity. This is like the worst way that you could do it. We never did that in American history until the 16th Amendment in the early 20th century, and whammo. We've started taxing people's incomes. It was supposed to be temporary, mind you, but then, no, it when this first came around, it continued in place and has never gone away and is terrible. Warren Davidson says it's time to get rid of it. We never had an income tax originally, and it's time to get it. They passed the 16th Amendment, he says. They made it legal to tax people's income, and it was originally just going to be for really, really rich people. But now, of course, it hits everyone. So, HJ Resolution 47. He introduced it last year, but the House hadn't voted on it. Well, guess what? It is moving forward. It's been referred to the House Judiciary Committee, but guess what? He is working again to get a vote on it, a recorded vote. Now, there are other House members that have expressed their approval of this, their support behind it. Ronnie Jackson in Texas, Mary Miller in Illinois. These are names we're familiar with all the speaker fights and the different things we've had. But, I mean, This is a no-brainer, right? This just seems like a no-brainer. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer to Warren Davidson. That's what he says. He said, what did he say here? I love one of his quotes. He said, even if you don't have a lot of income, you still have to file, so the government spies on everything. Like, did somebody pay you? Did you pay somebody? Did you buy or sell something? Did you make or lose money? Did you give a gift or receive a gift? Was the gift too generous? Get out of my life and get a warrant if you need to know all this stuff. I think we can all agree with Warren Davidson on this. So, good for Congressman Davidson, good for Congresswoman Miller, for Congressman Jackson, for the people who are lining up to support this. This is something that's been out there, but it's getting traction again. And while we're at it, by the way, we should steamroll the 16th Amendment, get rid of the income tax, and then we should also steamroll the 17th Amendment, get rid of the direct election of U.S. senators. That's a whole different topic for a different day, though, because our system was set up differently, and it was done so on purpose. Originally, from the beginning, not including the direct election of senators. We can get into that, though. The states have a voice. The individuals have a voice. The people's house and the state. Anyway, this is a good idea. Good for Congressman Davidson to get this moving again. The income tax should not be a reality in America. It's a regressive way to tax people. It's terrible to tax their productivity instead of products themselves. This isn't the way to do it. So there you go. We've closed out with some good ideas, some bad ideas. We should ditch the 16th Amendment and kill ranked choice voting, nip it in the bud, as Barney Fife would say, all in the same fell swoop. 2024 sounds like a good year for both of these things, right? Right. So be informed, be knowledgeable. Take all of this information and this self-educating that you're doing in places like here at the Pro America Report, all the websites you visit, the places you know, and make sure that you are starting these conversations and and sharing it with friends, family, coworkers inside your sphere of influence, because we need America to be more armed with educated information and with motivation to action, that we may fulfill our civic duty and see some serious change happen from the electoral level while we still can. So go forth and do it. Be encouraged. There are good things happening and there are bad things that you and I need to kill. Thank you for being with us today on the Pro America Report. Thanks to Mason, my co-producer, for helping me keep everything on time. And of course to you for listening and making this show what it is. We appreciate you. We love you, and we will talk to you tomorrow on another edition of the Pro America Report.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.